This is Roger Penske, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, sponsored by Penske Truck Rental.
IndyCar fans, it's time to start your engines. Welcome to Pit Pass Indy, a production of Evergreen Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Martin, a journalist who regularly covers the NTT IndyCar Series. Our goal at Pit Pass Indy is to give racing fans an insider's view of the exciting world of the NTT IndyCar Series in a fast-paced podcast featuring interviews with the biggest names in the sport. I bring nearly 40 years of experience covering IndyCar and NASCAR, working for such media brands as NBCSports.com, SI.com, ESPN Sports Ticker, Sports Illustrated, Auto Week, and Speed Sport. So let's drop the green flag on this episode of Pit Pass Indy. Welcome to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental, as we continue our fourth season of giving IndyCar fans a behind-the-scenes look at the NTT IndyCar Series and the drivers and teams that compete in the Indianapolis 500. It's been over a week since IndyCar's $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club, but it remains a hot topic of conversation among some IndyCar fans on social media. The weekend included two full days of testing plus an exhibition race that was a dash for cash won by Chip Ganassi Racing's Alex Palou. There was also some testing the last week of March at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the road course, as teams that haven't participated in hybrid assist testing were able to get their first laps with the new device that is expected to be deployed in competition in July at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Penske Entertainment President and CEO Mark Biles is my guest for this edition of Pit Pass Indy as we get an in-depth analysis of IndyCar's $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club, as well as other important topics, including the ongoing negotiations for the next television contract and the plans for the 108th Indianapolis 500 in May. Here is my exclusive interview with Miles for Pit Pass Indy. Joining us now on Pit Pass Indy is Penske Entertainment President and CEO Mark Miles. Mark, IndyCar tried something new at the Thermal Club. It received mixed reviews, but it was racing and it was a weekend of racing and you had testing, which was probably very, very valuable for the teams in the series and also a chance to run for some money. So looking back at the big picture viewpoint, I know there are probably some things you might do differently if you have this concept again, but what would your assessment be of the $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club?
Yeah, well, I'm really glad we did it. I think it served a number of useful purposes, one of which you mentioned, which is really the foundation for it, right? It's testing plus. So we, a year ago, went out there and did 2 days of testing, maybe it was three. And this time we did that, and the teams got the benefit of that. And the teams which perform best also had a pretty good payday, which you don't normally associate with a test. We had 800,000 people watch it on TV. That wasn't instead of a race. We still have 17 championship points races this year that will be on television. This was in addition, a kind of a bonus audience is the way I think about it. And, yeah, I mean, some of it was really good racing. We got good feedback on the qualifying. There are things we undoubtedly would tweak when we think about next year, if we, you know, when we decide what we do next year. But all in all, I think it was helpful and worth the effort.
A lot of people on social media is not necessarily a large demographic, but a very vocal demographic. And it seemed like they all shared a lot of opinions. Not a lot of them were necessarily positive, but it was a work in progress. A lot of times IndyCar is encouraged to, you know, go out and think out of the box. Well, this was an out of the box idea, but yet there's always going to be some group over here that always tends to find something wrong with it. So how do you balance all of that when you're trying to create ideas? Not every idea is going to be perfect right off the bat, but how do you take all that into account?
One way to think about it is, if we didn't do it, what would people be talking about?
The fact there wouldn't have been a race.
Yeah, we'd be talking about a long break. And so, you know, I like this a lot better than the silence that would have maybe been expected had we not been at Thermal. But look, we care about what our hardcore fans think, and that's primarily the people who are on social media, and we learn from that, and we can improve for sure. So I think there are a lot of positives. I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and all in all, as I said, I'm glad we took the initiative, and it's a cool place, and I think, you know, we can learn from what we did and think about what's next.
Some of the other fans thought because it was handled in an exclusive club that it created this elitist attitude. But then again, Formula One creates an elitist attitude, and it seems to be very popular. When you market, in a sense, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, isn't that one way to show the glamour of the sport?
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things that we learned from, and that is, IndyCar is accessible. IndyCar doesn't want to be elitist like something Formula One is. We don't want to price our fans out of the market. So that is, and that club is not set up logistically for big crowds. So by definition, it was going to be a small number of non-participants there. And it's a very upscale private club. That's one of the reasons we didn't give it points. We didn't want people to think it's a, you know, IndyCar's idea of what a championship IndyCar event looks like. Saying that, I don't think we positioned it well, and I think we can think about that in the future. What if, for example, I'm making this up, but next year we involve a prominent national sponsor, and the national sponsor, that the national sponsor is a charity. So again, I'm making this up, but it's the Red Cross, for example. So do we do something with the Red Cross, and does the Red Cross bring a couple thousand people that they invite because they're great supporters, they're volunteers, they're part of the fabric of the Red Cross? So then there'd be no mistake. We're not trying to gouge our fans, but we thought it was, you know, there is capacity for a couple thousand people. Maybe there's a different way to determine who gets in other than just those who are ready to write the check.
From what I saw, it appeared that the members of the club enjoyed it, though, that they were they embraced IndyCar, and, you know, it seemed to be a fairly festive atmosphere all weekend. So what was the reaction like from the members of the Thermal Club and their encouragement about getting even more involved with IndyCar?
Well, I think it was tremendous. You're exactly right. The members who were there looked forward to it. They got into it. A few were embedded in teams. That was a very special experience for a few. These are all car enthusiasts, right? And so they look forward to hosting. I think that was all positive. And I think there's a lot of good that can come out of the fact that a number of those influential car enthusiasts got closer to IndyCar, and it seems.
Because you're always looking for the next partner to get involved with IndyCar. Were there really any initial discussions or some people that came up to you and said, hey, we really like what you're doing. What can we do maybe that our companies can get involved with IndyCar?
I think that kind of conversation happened more between members and teams, and we'll see what kind of, what fruit gets harvested from it. But it's a start in terms of developing those relationships, and no doubt it'll be positive.
As far as the format, 2 10-lap segments separated by a halftime break. Colton Herta decided to save his tires, provided some of the real racing of the second group by charging up through the field, got all the way up into the top five. But if you were to do it again, would you tweak the format to maybe encourage, or not encourage, but mandate a green flag pit stop for every car in the field to really spice up the show a little bit, rather than having Alex Palou show the domination that he did?
Jay Fry and our IndyCar comp and ops people, race control, and the teams will be thinking about that. What'd we learn from it? What would be improvements? And from my perspective, it's too soon to be getting too specific about what that might look like.
And if you wanted to have an all-star event, I guess you showcase the greatest all-star that you've got in the series right now, which is Alex Palou, because he didn't do anything wrong the entire weekend. He won the pole. He was led every lap in his heat race and led all 20 laps in the All-Star Challenge. So I guess in some ways, he really did live up to the All-Star billing.
Oh, for sure. He's an All-Star. They're all All-Stars. That's why we thought the name was, it wasn't like we cut down the number of drivers, right? It's our paddock, our field. And we think they're All-Stars. It shouldn't surprise anybody, right, that Ganassi and Penske and, you know, the teams that tend to be dominated. They do that a lot in IndyCar racing. So, I thought it was a good platform for people to get another dose of IndyCar. And at the end of the day, I think it was bonus coverage in a sense that we appreciated from NBC.
Would you consider this type of event next year before the season starts and maybe, or would you consider it more as possibly a full-on race?
Again, we're not ready to reach conclusions about it yet. We don't know what our television schedule is going to look like next. We're going to have a new television partner or an extended television partner, but new arrangements. And part of the discussions we're having with for future TV rights is around the programming schedules. So until we know what the windows are and what a ideal schedule looks like, both for our promoters and for our broadcasters, it's premature to be talking about how thermal might fit. But one scenario that I think is attractive if it worked is that the event in whatever format continues to not have points and to be a test plus and to be before St. Pete.
Which kind of segues to my next topic that I wanted to ask you about. You're heavily involved now in the television negotiations. How close to the finish line are you to being able to determine which network it'll be on beginning in 2025?
Yeah, we're making good progress, really good discussions, still with a number of parties, prospective partners. I've been saying by the 500, I won't change that today. It could be earlier, but I certainly think that we'll have clarity by the Indy 500 this year.
There's been reports that you've said where you identified Fox as one of them, and I know they have a long history with NASCAR coverage and with NASCAR's new TV package. After the first 10 races of 2025, they have a lot of programming available. How would you gauge their interest?
I'm not going to get into exactly where everything stands at this point because it's a process. But yeah, for sure, NBC would like to keep the IndyCar partnership. Fox is interested, as are others. So we're delighted that we have at least a couple of linear partners, primarily linear partners, and prospects, and there are others as well.
And as far as those NBC's interests, they give you a platform, a streaming platform of Peacock. In the past, you and I have talked about the value of being able to have the same network with the streaming platform, and the value of that has to be pretty important and another factor for you to consider.
Yeah, it's the first part of the discussions is always about, with an interested prospective partner, is about, for us, what's the platforms? What are the platforms? What kind of exposure, where? Can we give everything from Indy Next, practice qualifying racing, to IndyCar, practice qualifying racing? So we look at each of these prospective partners for all they can bring to the table and what kind of exposure they can give us on which platforms. That's part of the discussion.
So going back 10 or 12 years when you started with IndyCar, time it was a different owner. It was the Hallman George family, which had owned the facility since Tony Holman had bought Indianapolis Motor Speedway in November 1945. At that time, one of your biggest challenges that you would hear from team owners is there's not enough entries. There's not enough teams. Go back to 2024, you walk around the paddock at 2024 and you hear a lot of the team owners screaming, we've got too many entries, we've got too many teams. So in one way, I guess you would say that's a measurement of success, but it's kind of funny that as you succeed in creating more teams, more entries, that now it flips the economics a little bit with the current team owners. So how ironic do you see all that?
Yeah, if it's a problem, it's a high-class problem. And when you're talking about IndyCar, it's true that the demand, the interest in joining IndyCar as team owners has continued to increase. And I guarantee you there are at least a couple organizations that are well-heeled and experienced in racing that would really like to figure out how to move up into IndyCar or to get into IndyCar. And then if you look at Indy Next, since Penske Entertainment took it over, the growth in entrance has been phenomenal. So I do think those are all indications of the success of the series at both those levels. Whether or not we need to have a little more scarcity to create a little more value, those are things we think about all the time. But to your basic question, there's a lot of things that I think back to where they stood in 2013, where I feel like we're in a lot better shape.
At St. Pete, you talked to us, a few of the media members, and talked about the charter system, the proposed charter system or franchise system, that's something that is seriously being discussed. Can you bring us up to speed a little bit on where that is at the moment?
Yeah, well, we're talking to a number of owners on really, I think, ironing out the details that'll get us to the kind of consensus that will allow us to implement a charter system, I hope, by the 500. I mean, to have formalized it by the 500. The talks are going good. There's a great, there's no acrimony. I just don't see a reason that we can't get clarity on what that's going to look like and get started.
Now, every time the term charter or franchise is mentioned, fans' hair gets set on fire and they run around and they say, you can't guarantee spots for the Indianapolis 500. That's what caused the split back in the 1990s. So how would you address that to them?
I don't see us doing that. So if that's a concern, I think they can feel confident that is not going to be part of the charter system that rolls out later this spring.
So you're saying that the Indianapolis 500 qualifications will remain the same as they've been? Open qualifying, everybody fastest 33?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's certainly good to hear. Now, as far as the importance of having a charter system, you as a businessman that runs a series, how valuable is that for both the teams and the series to be able to be locked in and know these are your teams and this is what you're going to end up? This guarantees them a brighter future.
I think it creates value and stability at the sort of one level, but then value for the teams that have supported IndyCar for a long time. So that's appropriate for them to have something they can sell or assign in the way of some rights that have some value, rather than just see a new team come along and be excellent and beat them out on the track and not take their right to race away, but they don't get anything for the value of what they've created. Is not optimal. So the charters basically create some more stability, and I think it's a system that will create value over time for the owners that receive charters at the outset.
How do you balance the charter system with potential new teams wanting to join the series?
Well, quite simply, the concept of a charter is that if somebody else comes along after the charters have been awarded, they will have to buy one to have all the benefits of a charter. That doesn't mean they can't race, right? They can race, but they won't race for the same benefits. And we'll get into those details as we talk more about how the charters might work. But we're not saying you have a charter or you can't compete in the IndyCar series. We're simply saying that if you have a charter, it entitles you to certain benefits, and that creates some value.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break. In the world of racing, Penske means performance and winning. For good reason. Since 1966, Team Penske has won 44 national championships, 17 in IndyCar alone. And last year, Team Penske claimed its Indianapolis 500 record-extending 19th Indy 500 win with Joseph Newgarden, the latest driver to win the famed race. Team Penske also won its second straight NASCAR Cup Series championship. In 2022, Penske was the first team in history to win both the IndyCar and the NASCAR Cup Series championships in the same season. Team Penske enters the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season with 236 IndyCar wins, including 34 500-mile race victories. Those are results that are tough to top. But Penske's legendary reputation for quality and attention to detail makes a statement off the track, too. When you need a truck, whether for your business or for a household move, Penske Truck Rental has some of the cleanest, newest, and best-maintained vehicles on the road. And we make it easy with personalized support from our associates, flexible reservations, and access to the top technology. With quick pickup and drop-off at more than 2,500 locations across North America, our scale and know-how will keep you covered, all helping to ensure you get the right, reliable, fuel-efficient vehicle when and where you need it. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. Get a quote today at PenskeTruckRental.com or, for household rentals, download the Penske Truck Rental mobile app today.
Hey, everybody. This is Joseph Newgarden, winner of the 107th Indianapolis 500, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy. Here is the rest of my exclusive interview with Penske Entertainment President and CEO Mark Miles on Pit Pass Indy. As far as television, after years of increases, the first two events that have been on TV in 2024 have shown a little bit of a drop in ratings. What do you perceive that as being?
Too soon to tell. I mean, I think we have other fan metrics that we gauge, and the fandom is growing. The engagement of fans is growing. Every time you watch the viewership, which means linear and streaming for each race, you scratch your head. It is very, very difficult to understand exactly why a race 1 week goes up. And when you get into it in even more detail and you look at, say, the top 25 markets and you look at the audiences in each of those markets by race, it just is, the dynamics are huge and it's very difficult to figure out what causes what. We don't reach any conclusions after two races this year.
At the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, you told a small group of reporters, including myself, that you'd created a marketing committee that included Daniel Tauris of Gainbridge, Group 1001, and also Zach Brown of McLaren and Jim Meyer of Meyer Shank Racing, who was the creator of SiriusXM Radio. So to have those people together as a committee, how are things involved in that at the moment, and what are some of the ideas that these guys can help come up with?
Well, those are smart marketers, and I've had conversations with all of them about ideas. I wouldn't call it a marketing committee, but I don't mean to quibble. It's there's a wide range of topics which we think can be important to the growth of IndyCar. So it has to do with more than what we think of as traditional marketing and communications and other things we can do that I think will attract more fan interest. So these are constructive people. They're smart people. I've talked to all of them. I had lunch with Jim Meyer, where he has a home in Arizona. We met out there and spent some quality time picking each other's brains. And I'll see Dan Tauris this week. And then we'll probably get the group together to talk as a group. So far, it's been sort of me with each of them, maybe at the open test in another couple weeks.
And is one of the values by having Zach Brown involved is, as the CEO of McLaren Racing, he can see what works in Formula One, what may not work in IndyCar, or what may be a good idea to try from both, that he's got a little bit of a broader viewpoint in terms of international marketing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, Zach created a very successful company before he was you know, in the current position with McLaren and in Formula One. He's a smart guy and he's a great marketer, a great sales guy. He has attracted investment. He's really a terrifically experienced businessman in sports. So he's got a lot to add to any conversation. But so do the others. I mean, look at what Jim Meyer did running Sirius Radio. I mean, you talk about understanding a marketplace, being in a very competitive space, how to deal with customers, and how to sell and bring advertisers into, in his case, the Sirius platform. And Dan, he's one of the smartest guys I know, very involved in making investments and investments in sports around the world. So we've got a really good group of people there. And by the way, we're not limiting our outreach for ideas to those four owners. There are always other conversations going on, looking to people who are prominent in the sport and who have ideas and are willing to share with us.
I would say that's another example of how things have changed since you took over back in 2012, is that you have these groups of owners who are now actively involved in things like that. Not that they weren't before, but the structure was just a little bit different. So in a lot of ways, to have new money involved, new owners involved, new sponsors involved, new teams wanting to join the series, to compare it to 2012 would almost be like comparing the going back to the way things were done 50 years ago to the way they're done today.
Well, I don't want to be too guilty of looking in the rearview mirror, but I appreciate the question and your observation about it. Listen, when I started, we had different broadcasters, no real strength, and there hadn't been any growth in our viewership for a long time. Drivers and team owners and everybody said, what are we going to do about that? So, as you know, since 2019, we've had over 30% growth in viewership, from an average television audience of about 900 and some thousand to a million, almost somewhere between 1.1 million and 1.2 million. We want to see those numbers continue to grow and get much greater. But we've had solid growth, and I think that's been one of the reasons that we have more interest in the series. We also are really happy with the growth of our events. They're investing more. They're doing a better job of being more professional, higher quality, and ultimately growing the audience. So all one has to do is look at St. Pete, which we've already seemed to have forgotten about, but it was a phenomenal success. And that's because of the series and its attractiveness and because of the promoter group doing a phenomenal job there for 20 years. And that's just an example. I think we're hitting on a lot of cylinders, but we've got a big upside and we're eager to continue to invest and to pursue it.
One of the new partners that has joined forces over the last 5 years or so is Hy-Vee. They're going to sponsor not only the Hy-Vee IndyCar race weekend at Iowa Speedway in July, they're also going to be the presenting sponsor, the entitlement sponsor, the Milwaukee doubleheaders on Labor Day weekend. They heavily activate in their stores IndyCar displays all season. This past week, they entered into an agreement with NASCAR to be an official partner in the supermarket category for Iowa Speedway and Kansas Speedway, and they're going to be the entitlement sponsor at NASCAR. So now, does that help IndyCar in terms of opening the level of Hy-Vee interest that some of those fans have that maybe NASCAR fans to maybe take a look at IndyCar? Or how do you view them now also getting involved with NASCAR?
Well, Hy-Vee is a great partner of ours, and they continue to invest more broadly, more deeply in IndyCar. And they are also, as you're pointing out, getting involved with NASCAR, which is sort of natural, right? Since IndyCar is running our Hy-Vee event in Iowa at a NASCAR-owned track. I don't see that as an issue for us at all. I think it's an opportunity, as you've mentioned, and we're grateful they've come along. You know, partnerships or sponsorships is one of our great growth stories. We have had a 40% increase, frankly, in revenue from our partnerships over the last few years. And the average tenure of a relationship, of a sponsorship or partnership between ourselves and a company is 14 years. So we don't talk about that much, but the number and investment and the depth of the relationships and increasingly their activation in the sport, like the Hy-Vee example, is a tremendous growth story and one that I expect will continue.
Now, looking ahead, the next race on the schedule is going to be the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. Jerry Forsyth, former team owner in CART, was able to purchase the percentage of shares of the ownership of that event from the estate of Kevin Kalkoven and said it will remain an IndyCar event. So now that all that's been settled, just the enthusiasm level for what is annually the second biggest race on the IndyCar schedule.
Yeah, it's a tremendous way to start the year, first in St. Pete and then getting to Long Beach. They're great events that captivate their markets with a lot of history. Jerry is a great friend of IndyCars, and that race is going to be an IndyCar race for a long, 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 long time, as far into the future as anybody can see. And we'll look forward to seeing how it can continue to not simply exist as a stellar IndyCar event, but grow. And I think there is potential for growth there as well.
Before that, however, will be the two-day Indy 500 open test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is always very important because it gets everybody that's going to compete in the race a chance to run out, get track time, get an early shakedown to what they will be doing during the month of May. Just the outlook for that. You know, the excitement level always seems to creep up a little bit when the Indy 500 open test begins.
Yeah, well, it's palpable, right? We will know whether, well, we know that the left digit for the number of cars that want to try to qualify for the 500 is a 3. We'll figure out whether the right digit is a 4 or a 5, I think, with the open test. So that's exciting. See the rookies come out and go through their paces and then see these cars on the track. We can't wait. This past week, we've had 6 teams. Ultimately, I think about 13 drivers have their first experience with the hybrid. That's exciting. And from my office, I can hear the cars on track and love it. When that makes it harder to have a phone call because we know we're out there and racing is right in front of us.
A lot of people have always said the Indianapolis 500 is a life-changing event. On April the 8th, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is going to be in the right direct in the middle of the path of a once-in-a-lifetime event. A total solar eclipse. Doug Bowles over at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has been promoting that throughout the year. I guess the only thing left is whether the weather cooperates or not. Everybody wants to see a total eclipse on a cloudless day. Indiana in April isn't always known for cloudless days. But what are some of the things that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway has planned for that day if fans want to find a good, nice area to be able to view what only happens possibly once in a lifetime?
Well, let me first say that apparently fans want to do just that because we've sold over 16,000 tickets and young people 18 and under are free. So I know I have about 8 adults in my family that are going to take about 40 kids out there. I don't know what the average ratio will be of ticket buyer to kids that come out, but it could be a really big crowd. And we do have a lot in store for them. They're such clever marketers. So we have the greatest spectacles in racing. I don't know what the rest of it is, but the greatest spectacles for the eclipse, and everybody will get the glasses, and there are great partnerships with Purdue University and with NASA, and both are providing programming related to STEM and what's going on up in the sky. But then the other thing is, anytime we do anything at IMS, we see it as an opportunity to acquaint people with IndyCar. So Ed Carpenter will have a car out on the track, and fans who may not have ever gone to an Indy 500 or been out to the Speedway for racing before will hear that and see that and hopefully begin to catch the bug. We're really excited about it.
I would imagine you have a lot of the state of Indiana, state police, and also the Indianapolis, City of Indianapolis Police Department that will be on duty for that, helping to direct traffic, because for one thing, there's going to be traffic everywhere in the path of the eclipse. So is logistics going to be a problem getting people in and out of Marion County that day?
Well, I know that all the agencies are planning for a big day and making sure that they have all their staff available and that the plans are in place. So I expect soon more good communication for citizens and fans and visitors will roll out so people know more about what to expect. But our officials are on it. In the end of the day, at the track itself, even if there's 60,000 people, right, we know how to get 60,000 people in and out. And I think it can be a great experience for people who decide to see it at the track.
Wrapping up to the big weekend on Memorial Day in May will be the 108th Indianapolis 500. A lot of big names going to be in the race, including Kyle Larson. Roger Penske, the owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, has said as early as January that ticket sales were up. At that time, he said they were 11,000 over the pace of what they had been at that point. What can you tell us about it now?
Yeah, well, the year-over-year increase continues. We're seeing really strong interest in the race, and frankly, not just the race, but every day that we sell advanced tickets for. So whether it's Carb Day, which is way up, the Snake Pit on race day, the qualifying weekend, the Grand Prix, every single day is up in a useful way, which I think is just a great statement about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar there, and speaks to the interest in IndyCar.
Are you adding any new seats, any new areas? Is the demand that high yet?
No, we don't have to do that. We haven't quite finished selling out the grandstands, although I think that will happen. And then it's a matter of how many people we put into the infield. I will say, while it's not about seats, as you know, in the infield, there's a labyrinth of mounds, grassy little hills that people can sit on a blanket or in a lounge chair. And now, not all of them, but especially in turn four of the oval, in front, there's a fence, right, that keeps people from the mounds away from the track and vice versa. And on that fence, about every, 25 feet, there's a TV. So it's not as big a screen as the big screens around the grounds, which there are more of for this year. But even on the mounds in the infield, the experience will be greater because of investment in technology out there, so people can see exactly what's going on all the way around the track. So it's going to be a great experience wherever people decide to come in, and it's going to be a huge crowd.
Well, it always is a huge crowd at the Indianapolis 500, and I know that you're trying to make it to where there's huge crowds at every other race on the NTT IndyCar Series schedule. Mark Miles, President and CEO, Penske Entertainment. Good luck the rest of the 2024 IndyCar season, and thank you for joining us today on Pit Pass Indy.
Thanks, Bruce. Have a great weekend.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
And that puts a checkered flag on this edition of Pit Pass Indy. We want to thank our guest, Penske Entertainment President and CEO Mark Miles, for joining us on today's podcast. Along with loyal listeners like you, our guests helped make Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental, your path to victory lane in IndyCar. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske Truck Rental keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. For more IndyCar coverage, follow me at Twitter at Bruce Martin, one word, uppercase B, uppercase M, underscore 500. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thanks to our production team. Executive producers are Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Recordings and edits were done by me, Bruce Martin, and final mixing was done by Dave Douglas. Learn more at evergreenpodcast.com. Until next time, be sure to keep it out of the wall.